And we are back. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Warning Shots, CKUW's independent international news show. I am your host, Scott Price. Time is 1:17. Ali Saeed was supposed to be joining us. Hopefully comes in for later on in the show. He is not in yet. Maybe he's got held up with something else. I'm not sure. So we're just going to go into the other content for the show today. So what has happened recently is that as I said at the top of the show, there was a mining license was given to a mine in Guatemala by Tahoe Resources. Now this mine, there's significant controversy around it, and sort of these problems. So this is my interview with Amanda Kistler to talk from. She's the communications manager for the Center for International Environmental Law, to talk about this mine that was license that was given in Guatemala and some of the context surrounding that and the issues, as well as she also talks a bit about other situations of dubious mines going on in Guatemala. So without further ado, here is Amanda Kistler on the controversial mine that was just awarded to Tahoe Resources in Guatemala.
Amanda, I guess the place we should start with this question of this mine is, what region is this mine located in?
The mine is located in Santa Rosa and a little bit in Jalapa, Guatemala, which is about 2 hours if you're driving southwest of Guatemala City.
Okay. And now this area that we're talking about, I guess to give more background, what is the area like socially and economically?
Sure. The communities surrounding the mine are mostly campesino. Their peasants, they survive on agriculture and cattle raising. There's also an indigenous Xinka community that lives nearby and would be impacted by the mine.
Mm-hmm. Now, economically, I'm also assuming that the people are a bit poorer because are they like poor sort of farmers, or what's economically their situation? Are they pretty precarious, or?
I think, generally speaking, most people live in a pretty precarious situation in Guatemala, anyone mm-hmm. in a rural setting. And certainly they live off the land, so there's concern not just about water contamination, but water scarcity, because the mine is going to use so much of it. There's also a lake nearby, Lake Ayarza, which is of huge cultural importance, and people are concerned about that being depleted and contaminated.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we get more into all the current controversy surrounding the mine, a bit more background. So this company, Tahoe Resources, who runs it, and where is it based out of?
Tahoe Resources, it's a fairly recent company. The CEO is Kevin MacArthur. He's a former CEO of Goldcorp, Inc. Tahoe is incorporated in Vancouver in British Columbia. But they also have an office in Reno, Nevada. So they're traded on both the Toronto and New York stock exchanges. It's a relatively junior company. The only project that they have is the Escobal project in Guatemala, and that's a silver project. There's a lot of link as well between Tahoe and Goldcorp, not just because of the CEO, of Kevin MacArthur, but also a number of their board members, of Tahoe's board members, also sit on Goldcorp's board of directors, and Goldcorp owns 40% of the shares in Tahoe.
Okay, well that's some good background information. Now, in talking about this mine, as I understand it, though, there has been a long history of there is this point where we're at now, where people are angry about this approval, but this resistance goes back a bit further, correct? Against this mine?
It does. The official, for example, people only really began to understand the impact of the mine back in 2011 when the environmental impact assessment was presented publicly. That meant that Tahoe had drafted it, submitted it to the Ministry of Environment and Natural Resources in Guatemala, and then under Guatemalan law, this ministry has to publish it publicly, and there's a comment period of 20 days. And there's a lot of discrepancy about the mining law. There's currently, there was recently a legal challenge put forward by indigenous groups saying that the mining law was illegal. But part of the problem is this 20-day window. The environmental impact assessment is 900 pages. I was told that it was presented in English, and so the accessibility of participation for local communities is extremely low, and that's if they were checking the local papers where it was publicized. It's not like the Ministry of Environment went out to local communities to present it. So that the idea of consultation has just never been present for the communities that are going to be impacted by the mine. As a result, they've tried to organize themselves. The example that they have in Guatemala of mining is Goldcorp's mine in San Marcos, the Marlin mine, where local residents complain of contamination, of health problems related to contamination, water scarcity, etc. And so there's very tangible evidence of what mining can bring to communities. The Tahoe Goldcorp link is also, you know, very apparent to people around the mine, and so they have been organizing these community referendums. Under international law, indigenous communities have specially protected rights to free, prior, and informed consent on any projects that will impact them. That's under the International Labor Organization as well as the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So the Xinka populations should have been able to give their free, prior, and informed consent, which was never obtained, as well as under municipal code, communities have the right to give their consent on projects that will impact them. And so as a result of the fact that communities were not given this opportunity by the government, they organized their own referendums, and they were able to hold three to date, in which over 97% of people have voted against the project. The most recent one was 99%, and of course, it was after that most recent referendum that the attacks occurred against the Xinka leadership, which I'd be happy to talk about as well.
Right. Well, it was good that you explained kind of the referendum and that, because my understanding too is that 99% of the people voted against this project, right?
That's right.
Now there was also, as you just alluded to, now there was also after this vote, there was also an activist who was abducted and then found dead later.
Yeah. So after the most recent referendum on March 17th, there was a group of four members of the Xinka leadership, including the president of the Xinka Parliament, that had attended the referendum in solidarity. And as they returned home, all four were abducted. And over, you know, the course of that night, people had said they had been disappeared. Two managed to escape and sounded the alarm. The next morning, the car was found riddled with bullet holes, and as well as the body of one of the men. And then later in the day, the president of the Xinka Parliament was discovered in a different municipality.
Now, as far as that case goes, is there any leads who is investigating this?
There is an investigation, technically, and actually local communities, when they heard about what had happened after they had heard the alarm sounded by the two men who were able to escape, went to the area and basically closed off all traffic in order to preserve the crime scene so that an investigation could take place and it would be untouched. But what we're calling for as the international community in support of local communities' calls for action is for the Attorney General of Guatemala to ask for investigation from the CICIG, which is the International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala, And it's a UN body. It's totally independent. They've taken on kind of the most high impact cases in the country. And we think that it's time for kind of this higher body to step in, given that the evidence so far that kind of the national government is not interested in de-escalating this conflict. And there was another violent incident in January that has been unresolved. So we think it's time for the CC to step in and help the Guatemalan Attorney General with this case.
Yeah. Now, as I also understand it, there is also on top of, I mean, the lack of community support, as you said, those controversies, the death there. There's also a current criminal complaint against the mine for industrial contamination as well. Correct?
Yes, that's true. And honestly, there's not further information on that. The complaint is lodged. It's currently under investigation, but it hasn't been resolved. There is also, in addition, I mean, the licensing process has been called a variety of things by local legal organizations, you know, arbitrary, and, you know, undertaken in dark corners without, you know, any public process. But in addition to this criminal complaint about the industrial contamination is 250 individual complaints that have been lodged against the company by local community members. And under Guatemalan law, each of those individually has to be resolved before an exploitation license could have been issued. And then what ended up happening was the day that the license was issued on April 3rd, all 250, more than 250, were summarily dismissed, saying that they are invalid. So that process is also extremely questionable.
In talking about this whole litany of controversies around this mine, and yet it was approved, is there any legal precedent of getting a mining license overturned that has so much controversy and outstanding issues?
Well, the closest thing in Guatemala would probably be the Marlin Mine, which has a case pending at the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. And the commission did issue precautionary measures ordering the Guatemalan government to suspend the mine while it investigated the underlying human rights abuses. And what Guatemala did was basically ignore this order. They started an administrative, quote-unquote, administrative process that took over a year, and after which time the Guatemalan government concluded that there wasn't contamination issues. And I would say, so Guatemala, the precedent, really, the political will has not been there. But what we've seen in other countries, such as El Salvador and Costa Rica and Chile, is that where the political will does exist, the government has been able to suspend or revoke licenses that have already been issued. So Guatemala, what the government has proven is that it's prioritizing profits over people thus far.
Now, I'm also curious because you said that there's a connection to Goldcorp and it's based out of Vancouver. What kind of laws or things could be done within Canada against mining companies who are embroiled in this kind of controversy?
Well, I'm not Canadian, but we do have a number of Canadian partners, such as Mining Watch Canada. I know that last year there was a major legislative initiative to pass C-323, which would impart some accountability for operations of Canadian companies abroad, and that it lost by, I believe, a very small number of votes, which is unfortunate. I think that kind of initiative is extremely important in the United States. We have that, you know, foreign operations can be held accountable in U.S. courts, although it remains extremely difficult to prove that connection. In the case of another company in Guatemala, Hudbay Minerals, which is a Canadian company that operated in the northwest part of Guatemala for many years, there are cases pending in Canadian courts that charge the parent company, Hudbay Minerals, with human rights violations. And that includes the murder of one leader, the rape of several women in a nearby village. And it's because they're trying to prove that they did have awareness of what was going on in their operations in Guatemala. And again, that is a challenge to prove, and it's something that companies very much try to de-link their local subsidiaries with what goes on in the headquarters. But that, I think, that link is absolutely crucial to being able to hold these transnational companies to account for the abuses and the violations that are being caused on the ground in the communities where they're operating.
Now, for listeners who are interested, maybe they want to get involved, is there a, I believe there is a petition to sign related to this? And also, if you could tell the listeners, if they want to get involved or more information, where they can do that.
Sure. We do have an active petition. It is targeting the company, so Kevin MacArthur, asking for their withdrawal from the communities, as well as the ongoing ask to the Guatemalan Attorney General for intervention by the International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala for investigation into the attacks. And that can be found through our website, and that's www.ciel.org. Or as well, there is a website called goldcorpoutofguatemala.com. That's all smushed together, goldcorpoutofguatemala.com. where there is compiled a variety of information, reports, studies, actions, press releases on the situation of mining in Guatemala.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Scott.
And that was Amanda Kistler with Communications Manager for the Center for International Environmental Law to talk about the Tahoe Resources silver mine in Guatemala, which has quite a bit of controversy around it. More info on that. There was a response to the license being issued. Community members began a peaceful protest to block the mine entrance, kind of as a last-ditch effort to have their voices heard in their opposition against this mine on April the 8th. Now, last night, Guatemalan security forces violently evicted the protesters. Dozens were wounded, and 26 were arrested. And to what I know, many are still detained. There will be legal actions against the questionable eviction process, which will be forthcoming as well. So that is all what's going on. So something that we will continue to look at here on Warning Shots, and something that we've certainly touched on here and there, but more and more is a very dubious nature of a lot of goings-on of Canadian mining companies around the world. It's actually not a very good reputation at all, so much so that I know in places like Guatemala or other places where there has been a lot of Canadian mining activity, wearing a Canadian flag on your backpack on anywhere might get you into a bit of trouble, wherein people will actually come up to you and be like, hey, what's going on with your Canadian mining companies? How come they do such horrible things to our country and to our people? So it's actually, it's usually thought of as Canada. Oh, when you go and have your Canadian flag on with pride, so they know that you're not an American. Well, more recent memories actually point to a lot of people having a lot of anger towards Canadians because they have that association between when they see the Canadian flag, they think again of these mining companies that have caused them grief. Well, more than just grief in the case of some of these. I mean, you're talking about forced evictions, not following legal procedures, people who are opposing these mines being kidnapped and murdered. Of course, I don't know how much it's still legally, we don't know how much these mining companies know of this stuff that's going on. That's not proven, but there's all these very controversial aspects that create people's perceptions. So I think that's an interesting point to also point out here with Canadian mining companies.